Meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education will please come to order. Thank you. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through the annual public notice on May 9th, 2011. Will you please have the roll call? Pardon?
Working on it.
May we please have the roll call vote?
Christie.
Here.
Mr. Frazee.
Present.
Mr. Grant.
Here.
Mr. Tappan.
Here.
Mr. Malloy.
Here.
Mr. Conklin.
Here.
Mr. Sturgis.
Here.
Mr. Sullivan.
Here.
Mr. Dinkins.
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. It seems like everybody else's mic is on except mine. That wasn't done intentionally, was it?
No, not at all.
I'd like to ask everyone to please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Is this yours, Kevin? Or is it?
No. You can go, sir.
I think it is. Organization resolutions. Starting with A, these are positions that we normally appoint at this time of year. The April Board of Education meeting is when we usually have the reorganizational meeting. But since that reorganizational meeting will not be held until January, these positions need to be approved at this time. So that's A. B is the authorization signatures on the accounts in the various schools. C is number three is petty cash. Number four is the payroll account. Five is payroll summer. Number six is payroll agency account. Seven is unemployment. Eight is capital and capital reserve accounts. Nine is employee flexible spending account. Number 10 is the cafeteria account. Where do we go from there, Tony?
C, D, each of those.
Okay. Then we have C, D all the way through L. Can I have a motion from the board to approve all of those items?
So moved.
So moved by Mark Kaplan. We have a second?
Second.
Second by Kevin. Any discussion on any of those items? Hearing none, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Mr. Kaplan.
Yes.
Mr. Malloy.
Yes.
Ms. Christie.
Yes.
Mr. Frazee.
Yes.
Ms. Grant.
Yes.
Ms. McLaughlin.
Yes.
Mr. Sturgis.
Yes.
Ms. Sullivan.
Yes.
Mr. Dinkle.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. The only item under the president's comments is the board retreat, which has been rescheduled for May, help me out on that.
19th.
May 19th, and that'll be on a Saturday morning from 8 to 12. And my understanding is that we have one board member that will not be able to make it. Other than that, if that is a problem for any of the board members, please let me know. But we anticipate that retreat being from 8 in the morning until 12 noon. We move on to the report of the superintendent of schools, Mr. Carroll.
Thank you, Mr. Dinkoff. Enrollment as of April 1st, 1,631. Suspension since the last board meeting, none to report at all four schools. Harassment, intimidation, and bullying report, There was one investigation at Spruce Run School, one at the Round Valley School, both determined not to be HIV. We were, once again, this is the third year after the CUSAC review in this district, the Quality Single Accountability Continuum. Once again, we were found to be a high-performing district. Scores, instruction, and program were 90%, fiscal management 98%, and governance, operations, and personnel at 100%. As stated by the county superintendent, the letter I shared with the memo I shared with the board, we will be up for another review in 3 years or until the CUSAC regulations are changed. Under supportive environment, we had technicians from Radiation Data and Brinkerhoff Environmental Services at Clinton Township Middle School and Spruce Run School over the spring break to work on the radon mitigation. Both schools had passive radon mitigation systems in place. The systems were made active by the installation of fans that will run continuously. A specific draw test was performed to verify the current system placements would effectively ventilate the areas of the schools. And we will conduct, we will reschedule our testing of both buildings, all classrooms and office spaces, the week of June 10th. And the reason for that is though CTMS has air conditioning throughout the school, Spruce Run does not. So the conditions for students and staff at Spruce Run would have to be closed windows for the whole time of 3 days of testing, which we know would be unbearable for everyone in the building. So we are going to wait until after June 8th, which is the last day of school, and that next week go ahead and do testing at both schools. And it's a matter of closing the systems so that there's no open windows, no exterior doors open, and it is put into the same mode that it was when we did our original testing earlier this year. And once we get that information back, I will make that information public to our community and staff. And then lastly, I have a student achievement presentation by our very own Ms. Bobby Philippe, Director of Curriculum and Instruction.
Last month at the board meeting, the request was to do presentations on the American Reading Framework, which we're calling Read, 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 our K through 5 reading program, our MAP assessment, and the science pilot in fourth and fifth grade. So this month I'm going to report on the Read, Read, Read. The students will be taking their final examination in the science pilot later on this week, and so I should have the results for that by the May board meeting so I can report on that. And our second administration of the MAP testing will be in May, and we will be able to start compiling the results the beginning of June, because you really need two assessments in order to start looking at the growth that students have. So that would be the June report that I can do that. So this month I'm going to report on the Read, Read, Read program. We started in October in grades K through 3. We started last April in grades 4 and 5. By November 1st, we had preliminary leveling with all the students in all the classes. And then it took a little while after that to check the leveling to make sure that it was accurate for each of the students. If you look at the chart and if you look at the bar on top, that's the grade level equivalence. So through second grade, there is more than one level per grade. And that's because the skills that children are developing, there are so many skills, and so it's broken down into the beginning of the year, the middle of the year, and the end of the year. In kindergarten and in first grade and in second grade, it's broken down into the beginning of the first half of the year and the second half of the year. By third grade, there is just one color per grade. So in those grades, there are books that would somewhat match the beginning of the year and somewhat match the end of the year, but that would be true with any reading or any books that you use. To start looking at, I'm going to show you two different ways of looking at the data. And the first one will be this, which I have per school. So this is Spruce Run, grades kindergarten and one. And then I will show you percentages and we can talk about each one of them. So if you look at kindergarten, there are three color levels, Y2, Y3, and 1G, that represent where children should be during their kindergarten year. If you look at the left-hand column, what I did was I took data from the beginning of each month. I tried to do it on the first when I could, or the first Monday of the month. We had a little bit of a glitch the first of February, so I took the data from February 7th. But basically, it's 1 month growth between each of those bars, as you would call them on the chart. If you look at the red at the left of the chart, those would be children who would be considered emergency. The yellow color is at risk, and the green would be children who are reading at a proficient level or above. One of the things to note is that the proficiency moves throughout the year. So if we're just, and I'm going to explain this for kindergarten, and then it'll be easier to go through all of the other grades because the ideas are the same. So if you look at the kindergarten in November, if a child was in Y3, they're moving into the second third of the year, so they would be considered proficient. If you look at March 1st, though, that is now yellow. That's because children should be moving into the third part of the year, and Y3 would not be considered proficient any longer. Children would need to be in 1G. So later on, when we look at the percentages, there's some dropping in percentages, but part of that is because the bar moves as we go through the year. So that's just important to look at. But if you look at November 1st in kindergarten, we had 27 children who were proficient, and that I just got that by adding up the numbers in those green boxes for November 1st. By April 2nd, we had 87 children in kindergarten who were proficient, and only 16 who are below proficient in kindergarten. I think those are pretty amazing results. I think that one of the great things is that we can actually see, not only from month to month, which I have here, but I look at them and the principals look at them and the teachers look at the results more frequently than that. So we really can tell from day to day how children are doing and to make sure that they are making progress. I think the fact that in the beginning of the year, earlier in the year, we had a lot more children in emergency also. And in April, we only have 6 children who are in emergency at an emergency level. We still want all of them to be proficient, but the numbers there have really decreased and the numbers of the proficient readers have certainly increased a lot. In first grade, the same thing happens where the bar moved as you were going through the year. If you look at 2G, 1B, and 2B, those would be the areas that are considered a first grade reading levels. So we had a couple of jumps here because if you look at November, 2G would be considered proficient, but by December, a student had to be in 1B in order to be considered proficient. And then in March, a student would have to be in 2B. If you look at the numbers here, in November, there were 76 students who were proficient, and in April, there are 111 students who are proficient. And again, if you're looking at those numbers, you're also looking at it with the bar moving. So the 111 members who are proficient, children who are proficient, is at a higher level than would have been the children who measured proficient in November. If you look at the percentages, in kindergarten, the percentages continuously go up until March. They drop from February, 87.4% are proficient or above, and then in March, 79.6% are proficient or above. That drop coincides with the raising of the bar. So some kids were not proficient, but that doesn't mean that they went down, it means that the bar went up. And then in April, we're back to 84.5%. And the same thing is true for first grade. When you go from February to March, kids dropped, and then they're coming back up in April. As we take the second administration of the MAP, it will be very interesting to look at these results as compared to the MAP results to see how children are doing. If you look at the 17.3%, though, 79.3%, that would mean 14 more students are proficient or above than they were the month before. So even though 79.3% is lower than, say, 86.4, more students are higher because the bar has raised. Before I go on to Patrick McGarren, are there any questions that the board has about Spruce Run data?
Bobby?
Yeah?
Oh, sorry. Just looking at first grade, so on February 7th, we had 19 children that were not proficient in
yes.
first grade. But on March 1st, we had 46 children that were not proficient. Now, I understood what you said before about the bar changing, but it seems that if you only had 19 kids on February 7th, and then a month later, or actually less than a month later, you're up to 46, doesn't that seem like a big jump?
It does and it doesn't. There's a couple things that could be accounted for that. Children do not move up in this every day, but children move at different paces. So if I look at February 8th or February 9th, some of those children might have moved then. The children have to exhibit that they have mastered certain skills before the teacher could give them credit for it. And then once they get enough credit, they will move up. So there may be some of those children who were pretty close to moving up, but not quite there yet. So it really does take looking at the overview of the long-term picture to see the difference without getting too cumbersome, because of course, if I tried to give you a report of every day, it would just be unwieldy and overwhelming to look at. So I chose to pick once a month, and we're looking at the continued growth from there. But if you do look at first grade, even if you look at...
Well, I'm looking at February to April also, and you have a significant decrease in the number of children who are not proficient.
Correct.
You know, if you had 46 children in March 1st that were not proficient, and then you went down to 29.
Right. And that's what I was just going to talk about, too, that if you look at from March to April, even in the one blue, we went from 38 children in one blue to 24. A lot of those children moved up into the two blue, and then they would become proficient or above. So when the bar moved, it makes a little more sense for the number of children proficient or above maybe to not be as closely matched or rising as it would in other months. But it could be because the children just didn't move quite as quickly as the requirement of moving the bar, or it could be that some of those children were close to moving but not quite to where the teacher could put them in at a higher level to say that they had made enough progress to show that proficiency.
And going along with that, if I may, Ms. Philippe, Mr. Dinkoff, if you look at where when the bar moves the first time in first grade, it moves in December 1st, there are 75 children that are shown as partially proficient. The next time it moves is March 1st, and it's 46. So if you're really looking at when the bar moves and then putting that correlation together, even that number has decreased in the number that are recognized partially proficient. Then the number you're talking about, 29, April 2nd, is the second period of that bar being moved. That's a difference from 54 in January 2nd, which is the second time that bar is moved up. If you follow from December 1st, it moved up, then the next time of testing, it's at that same rate. That number goes from 75 to 54. And then the next time the bar goes up, it goes from 46 to 29. So you can see that partially proficient is even dropping as we move throughout the whole year.
And as a board, we should assume that not only does this testing identify the youngsters who are not proficient, but also indicates to the teachers those skill areas that the children need to improve upon in order to get to be proficient.
And that's part of the beauty of it, that it really does help the teachers target in and zero in on the specific skills that individual students need so that we can help them move up, which was data that the teachers did not have in the past. And so they were using observational methods to try and target the skills that students need, but they may or may not have been accurate in all of the cases, where there's a lot more accuracy here and it shows that the kids are moving up. And if you look at the percentages, I think in November, with the bar moving, that kind of accounts for where children are at the time. To go from 26.7% to 84.5% in those 6 months, I think is a pretty amazing growth. And it's not as much in first grade, but you would expect that because kids had some reading background, and so they started at a better level in first grade. But still, from 54.7 to 79.3, proficient, that's strong growth also.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
What's the benchmark for the end of first grade? Do you expect the students to be on 2B or do you expect them to be on 1R?
We expect them to be at least ready to move into 1R. So they might be at 1R where they've shown that they're moving into 1R, or they might be, with the data that the teachers are collecting, a point or two away from Red R, but the goal is to have them in Red R by the end of the year.
Okay. And then the students that are still falling below 1B and below, are those all students that are getting literacy support outside the classroom?
We use this data to determine what students need literacy support, and so it is the children who are struggling the most who would get the literacy support, who would get extra help in the success program, who would get more targeted instruction from their teachers. So all of those things are into place, and this is the data that we're depending on. That's really a lot more ongoing than we've had in the past.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. And the student population is all of our student population is represented in this data?
Including special education?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What are the NAs, the column in the NA?
The system does some kind of a calculation when kids move in or move out of the district, just to keep the numbers so that you're kind of comparing apples to apples.
Okay.
I don't know all the details of that, but that's what that pertains to.
So they don't represent real students that are being measured. They're students that either previously weren't in the district or have moved out of the district?
I believe so, but they are not students that were just, for some reason, aren't in,
okay.
In the system.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if I may, one more question.
Sure.
It's probably not a fair question. It's probably not apples to apples relationship, but have you been able to do some sort of analysis of the program that used to be implemented in the district to evaluate our students' progression in reading in comparison to this one?
Yes and no. We're looking forward to our ASK scores from this year because that'll give us some kind of comparative data. Part of the problem was in the past we didn't have the ongoing data that we have in this one. So we can look at DRA scores from the past and we will look at them this year to see what the difference there is. So there will be some that we can do. We can't do that on an ongoing basis because we didn't have the data in the past in order to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else with Spruce Run questions? So if you look at Patrick McGarren, you can see similar results. And I think that the bar went up again from January to February here in second grade. Because there's only a first half a year and a second half a year, so January 2nd to February 2nd, that's when the bar moved. And if you look at children, we had 65 children in second grade who were proficient or above in November, and 99 children who were proficient or above in April. And I think amazing to me, for whoever it is, you know, that one child who at December, and I'm assuming that might be where one of the NAs came in because I'm assuming that child was not here in November. Otherwise, I don't understand a reason for it going down. But we've had a child coming where we're at, that's at the pre-K level. Y1 is at the pre-K level. And by a month later, by January, that child had already moved into the end of kindergarten level. And I think that the fact that by April, we have no one in second grade who is below a 1B. We still have children who are below grade level, and we're working on that, and the teachers are targeting those students, but certainly there's a move up in the reading levels that is, I think, pretty exciting to look at. And the same thing is true for third grade. Now, third grade, if you notice the white line, where third grade is, the bar doesn't move because white, and from there on up, there's only one color per grade level. So we're looking at numbers. You know, we had 51 who were reading at the third grade level in November, and we have 139 reading at the third grade level in April. So certainly a lot of students moved up. If you look at where kids started in the beginning of the year with how many were emergency as opposed to at risk, we had a lot more emergency where in April we only have 6 kids in the third grade who are considered at the emergency level. The others, at least the 24, are at risk. But that only gives you 30 students out of the entire class at this point who are either emergency or at risk, and most of them are at risk. So that means they're moving closer to the proficiency level. If you look at the percentages, you don't have that drop that you saw with Spruce Run because the bar didn't move. But the percentages are continuously going up, sometimes a little bit more, sometimes a little bit less. As we get closer to more students becoming proficient, the percentage will move slower because there's not as many students who have to work to get that percentage moving up. But especially third grade, from 30.5% in November to 82.2% is, I think, pretty spectacular. Any questions on Patrick McGarren School? Mm-hmm.
Is there anything to stop a child from moving up into Orange in this school? I see that it kind of breaks
Nothing.
Off. Okay. Then that's just the natural way things have fallen out.
For this year, yeah.
Okay.
But I would imagine that if, as we move ahead next year, we're going to have more kids who are in the higher levels because they're going to be starting out in September stronger, I think, than they did this year. Mm-hmm. But by the end of the year, we can have some students, in, especially in third grade, who would be at the Orange level.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Bobby, I have one other question.
Okay.
When parents come in for teacher-parent conferences, is this information used? Do teachers sit down with the parents and go over this information and show the parent how their child is progressing in reading?
It wasn't used this year because we hadn't started the program. We were just getting started with it. So teachers did share where the children were leveled this year, but not as specifically as I believe you're talking about. But next year, yes, we will.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? So then if you look at Round Valley, I think that the results are just as spectacular. If you look at fourth grade first, in November we had 81 students who are proficient or better, and by April we have 131. And only we cut in half the students who were at below proficiency, either at risk or emergency. And we've also, students have definitely, the trend is up if you look at the numbers in all of those areas. And here we do have a lot of students who are moving above. You know, purple is the sixth grade level, and we have a lot of students now in the orange in fourth grade, which is fifth grade level, and students moving up into the purple. And I think that's an exciting part too, because in the past, some of the kids who were below grade level were struggling because they weren't getting the exact strategies or the reading material exactly geared to what they needed. So that wasn't the best for them, but also some of the students who were above grade level were not getting challenged to the point where they could have been challenged. And I think when you look at the demands within the colors in the American Reading, and if you look at the demands on the skill cards that teachers use those strategies, but also those go home with parents, the demands match the color level. So the demands match the reading. The children who are in the purple in fourth grade, for example, those teachers are going to be working with them on much more inferential kinds of comprehension questions, deeper thinking kinds of comprehension questions, really the skills that will prepare them for reading more complex novels and other kinds of written material, and also getting into the material at a lot deeper level and thinking about it. Fifth grade is a similar picture, where in November we had 66 kids who were proficient or better, and in April we have 114. And I think even though the bar doesn't go up, if you look at the numbers, for example, the children in November 1st in fifth grade in emergency, there were 24 children in the red, whereas in April there were fewer, but if you look up to the 2R, there were only 5 students in that category, so children are definitely moving up. If you look at the percentages, you see the same thing, where I think it's a pretty amazing growth of children who are proficient. And I think it's pretty amazing and pretty exciting that we have the data now that can inform our teaching and really help us on a day-to-day basis see the growth that kids are experiencing. Any questions on Round Valley?
Bobby, can you just review how the data is collected and the frequency? Is it daily, weekly? Who's entering the data?
The teachers, the American Reading Framework has what they call an IRLA. It's an individualized reading leveling assessment tool. And that is geared to the Common Core standards, where all of the standards for the grade level, for the reading level, are there. And when the teacher conferences with the student, the teacher has that IRLA and also a lot of other skills. For example, in the lower grades, down in the green level, there are tricky words that kids have to make, teachers have to make sure that they learn. They're not particularly in the standards, but they're, children have to master them before they can move on. In once you start getting into the white or the third grade level, vocabulary becomes a lot more important. So sometimes children might be able to read the words, but if they can't define what a lot of those words are, then they have to be able to do that before they can move on. The teachers are collecting the data in this chart, which is the IRLA, and another time I can have a copy, you know, a sample page for that that I could show you. I didn't bring it this time, but and then periodically, as children make enough, they record the points in the IRLA, and then as children gain points, the teachers then transfer them to the electronic data collection system. So it's not every day, it's not every student, but you know, usually once a week a teacher will look and see what students in her class have earned points to be put into the school PACE is what it's called. But some skills, you know, if children just have a little bit of a struggle with it, they might master them pretty quickly. Others can take a good number of weeks if a child is really working at something that it's taking them longer to get. So there's not a consistent from child to child or teacher to teacher. It's really as the student shows that progress.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions?
I have one more.
Sure.
Especially on the percentage chart, you can really see the kids advancing, like in a three-month period from like November to January or February to April, you know, they're making gains of 10 to 25%, depending mm-hmm. on the grade level. What about over the summer? Is there something we can do to, I know we're not going to send the ARF program home with the kids, but something along the lines of a reading list or some recommendation to the parents, maybe to guide the kids in reading over the summer so they don't lose the skills?
We did start summer reading last year, where each grade had something that was sent home for the summer, and then the teacher the following year had the children do some kind of a project on what they read. This year we're working with the principals, and I are working with the teachers to refine that, so it'll probably be a little bit different from last year, a little bit stronger than last year, but yes, we definitely have a summer reading program planned because we don't want to see the children slip back. And kids are just really excited about, you know, there may be a couple who aren't too excited still, but the majority of children are much more excited about reading than they were because they're feeling successful. And so I think that will help get the momentum going with the summer reading too, where even a higher percentage of children will accomplish that over the summer because, of course, we have no control over who does and who doesn't read over the summer. But we want to make it exciting for them so that they are encouraged to read.
Maybe I know I've seen some of my kids are motivated by how many steps they earn or what level they get relative to the other kids in their class. They want to get more steps.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to motivate them. Maybe like a step goal for the summer. If you get so many steps, you're
right. That's what we used last year. We actually only used it in from fourth going to fifth grade because that was the only year that would really be familiar with it. But that is one of the things that we want to implement from kindergarten up because it's something that the kids are real familiar with and it's easy for them to accomplish.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Thank you.
Bobby, before you sit down, on behalf of the board, I want to thank you for the presentation. And Kevin informs me that next month we'll talk about the testing that we're doing in the area of science.
The pilot program from science.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Just a reminder, and I'm sure the board members don't need a reminder of this, but just for the benefit of the public, student achievement should be our primary concern and the reason that we come here and the reason that we give of our time. So I think to hear a report like you gave tonight and that we will be hearing about in the future about the various programs that we have is extremely important and really what it's all about. So thank you very much for the information.
You're welcome, and I and the principals agree with that, and we get really happy when we see good reports too.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bobby.
Quick question on the super's report. Can I ask a, Jim? Quick question on the super's report, if I can ask a question.
Sure.
Was there a bus accident at Patrick McGarren on April 5th? Or no? One of my kids and a few parents notified me that there was a bus accident in the morning from Patrick McGarren. Is that it?
Downtown Lebanon Borough, a bus moved over to let a larger truck pass, and in doing so, the bus driver clipped the side mirror. And once there is damage to the bus in the way of their mirrors or any of their safety devices, the bus can no longer move. So therefore, another bus was called in, and the students were moved over.
But there was no, I mean, one parent, I guess, was concerned that she said, you know, I got notified by the school nurse. I didn't even get notified by, I guess, an administrator, she felt, or I don't know. I don't know if it was accurate or not, but
you
I
know,
said.
We sent out a school reach, and, you know, whenever you get this information, Mr. Freda, if you can contact me right away, okay. And I can reach out to that parent, or my principal can, we can deal with that on April 5th.
Yeah, I did recommend that she contact you.
No,
you
know? I was not contacted, I will check with the transportation liaison, and I will check with Mrs. Goad, who was covering for the building. But we made sure, not only did we tell the parents of the students who were still on the bus, we let the parents who were know who were waiting for the bus not to wait, so that everybody was in the loop, as well as the school, that the students would be late.
I mean, because she's like, did you hear about it? I'm like, my daughter told me about it. I said, now I'm hearing about it from you as a parent. I said, but as a board, we didn't get notified of any accident or any potential injuries to any children or anything of that nature. So I was just curious, that's all.
Any other comments or questions about the superintendent's report before we move on to public comment? Seeing none, we'll open the meeting now for public comments on agenda items only. So if there's anyone that would like to address the board, please feel free to come to the mic, state your name and address, and try to limit your comments to 3 minutes, if at all possible.
Brian Millay, Old Clinton Road. I have comments on two agenda items. The first is actually two items. Resignations that are noticed in the personnel section. I'd just like to make a recommendation to the board that when openings come up, that the board reevaluate the necessity of those positions. Particularly in this case, the assistant school business administrator. North Hardin and Voorhees district, which is probably twice the size in terms of staff and students, does not have an assistant school business administrator. So I question whether or not we necessarily need one. And regardless of that, there would be presumably even a small amount of breakage in terms of salary and benefits, especially with the health benefits law changes. The board should look into see, even if it's whether the board comes up with $5,000 for benefits changes or not a not needed position for $100,000, the board should look into whether or not they can apply that to surplus and then perhaps lower the tax levy for next year. So that's my first comment. My second comment is on the new business item, the resolution pertaining to Mr. Korkadilas. Mm-hmm. I've had a chance to read this email. I don't see the necessity of this resolution. And further, I'd like to point out that in the last month, I think that the board has made some actions that have been, quite frankly, a disgrace, leaving aside the school budget issue. And Mr. Dinkoff, I'll address you. I understand, probably better than most, that Mr. Korkadilas can be bombastic and has been accused of being a bully, perhaps. But I see this as a continuum of a conflict between you and Mr. Corcadillas. It starts with your calling the police because, frankly, you don't like them, it seems. It continues to the last meeting when apparently you decided to threaten to ask for resignations from two unnamed board members with not much evidence, and now to this resolution tonight. And honestly, those actions are those of a bully, too. And I don't see much difference. And I think this board needs to concentrate and refocus more on moving forward on an efficient and effective school program and not continue this and perpetuate this circus. I've heard from people in town and out of town who think that this board is a joke. And that's a disservice to the community and it's a disservice to the kids. And I would encourage all the board members not to even make a motion. Just, it's time to move on. Knock off the nonsense. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. The only thing I would respond at this point in time is that the resolution that we have under new business, actually I spoke to at the last meeting that we had on March 29th when I read a public statement, and my public statement concluded with the board attorney has recommended that the board send a letter to Commissioner Cerf, the Department of Education official that was contacted, and the county superintendent, informing them that an unelected member of the community, Mr. Corcadillas, does not speak for or represent the Clinton Township Board of Education in any way, shape, or form. So this is a resolution that was suggested to us, to me, by our board attorney. You know, everybody is entitled to their opinion, and you certainly are entitled to yours. My belief, my understanding, is that this item is on the agenda to protect the Board of Education as a whole and to protect individual members of the Board of Education. In my opinion, it is in no way, shape, or form a vendetta or anything against any member of the community. People in the community have a right to express their opinion and to contact anybody they would like to contact at the Department of Education. My feeling is, and I don't believe I'm alone, that the email that is available to the public does in fact infer or imply that Mr. Corcadillas was trying to help out Board of Education members. But I thank you for your opinion.
If I may elaborate briefly, if that is the case and it is on the recommendation of the attorney, then I can't see how you can move forward without having the attorney present to ask him questions to explain himself. That I cannot fathom. If this is his recommendation, he ought to be here to explain it. And, you know, it's time for this school board to get off the front pages for the wrong reasons.
I agree. Thank you.
Janine Orico, Windsor Court. I don't like talking here, but I feel compelled to. I want to say I've been shocked about this. I've been following the board for about a year. What a year it's been. It's been disgraceful, like Mr. Millay said. I think that this is pure politics. I've been shocked at politics in Clinton Township. I really relate to Michelle Sullivan because I knew her slightly before she got elected. I think her children are similar to mine. She's a mother of daughters. And I was thinking of running for the board. I would probably have voted against the budget. I feel like I would have been a target for retaliation. I have a question for you, Mr. Dinkoff. Why, if four people were copied on the email, were only two singled out?
I'm not sure I understand what you mean by only two were singled out.
You said two people were had done ethical violations.
If you read the email, there were two people that were mentioned in the body of the email.
Right, but why didn't you do the four that were copied? What? Let me go on to my next question. So...
Wait, I thought I just answered your question.
Okay.
There were two that were mentioned in the body of the email.
Okay, here's my next question. So you've been on the board for a long time. So I'm thinking, if I was a new board member, I might not quite understand the rules. So if you had ongoing concerns with the new board members, as you said, why didn't you address them immediately? I mean, why didn't you pull them aside and say what you're doing is wrong? Or perhaps you did.
You have to be more specific.
You said in your statement last month you had ongoing concerns.
Relative to?
Ethical violations.
Okay.
If they were ongoing, why didn't you try to nip them in the bud?
There were discussions held in executive session concerning confidentiality with the entire board.
Okay, that's reassuring to me. Okay, the resolution that's in the new business, is that something the board plans on voting on tonight?
Yes, if it's moved and seconded. That's why it's part of a resolution. The board will be voting on it.
Okay.
Moved and seconded.
I would like somebody to add my name to that resolution, please. As long as Nick Korkadilis is listed, please add my name. I try to keep my name off the internet because it's a unique name, but I feel strongly about this. I think that Mr. Korkadilis, who I've never met, never contacted, is being singled out. And I hope everyone stands up and adds their name too.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Carol Nemitz. I live at 44 Hermanthal in Annandale. I'm also concerned about this resolution about Nick Korkadilis. I've just read the email tonight, and he says in it, if I were on the board, so he's obviously not representing that he's on the board. Perhaps you need to get your attorney here to explain to the public, or question your attorney, or perhaps get a new attorney, or have your attorney be here at the meetings, but I think you need better legal advice. Thank you.
Thank you.
Amy MacIsaac, 24 Riverbend Road in Clinton. I have a question about the calendar. I think it's number PC-037. Says, and if I understood you correctly, which I'm not sure I did, you're going to vote on these things tonight, and you're talking about approving the 2012-2013 calendar. Where is that? What does that look like? What were the results of the survey? Where do we stand?
When we get to that section, we'll review the results of the survey and the recommendation of the Policy and Curriculum Committee for a school calendar.
So you're going to show us the start date, the end date, where the breaks are, all that?
We'll discuss it specifically, start date, end date,
holidays,
professional training days, things of that nature.
And that's going to be voted on tonight?
Yes.
Okay.
And it has to be voted on tonight.
Okay. I'll stay for that. my second quick question was, if I recall correctly from the last meeting, were you voting on something regarding school choice, whether to move forward with that, I think, for the following year tonight? Or are you not talking about school choice tonight, whether to participate in that? I thought you had a deadline coming soon of when you had to decide if you were going to participate in that, not for next year, but the following year?
That is correct. The board would have to pass a resolution before April 30th that they no longer wanted to be in the program, but would have to continue on with the students that are currently in that, including the next year. But the board at any time prior to next year's advertising of the program can limit seats.
So you could put it at zero if you wanted?
Correct.
Okay. So is that going to be discussed among the board tonight, or is that not?
That is not currently on the agenda.
Okay. So therefore, right now, you're leaning toward continuing on with school choice? Because I was still waiting. I'm against school choice. I'm still waiting to see the benefits of this. And I'm still concerned, which I think I've mentioned a couple times, about the consequences of our property values for participating in this. And I haven't heard any evidence one way or another to show me how in other districts it has or has not affected property values or what the effects have been. So I'm still waiting to hear some information on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lana Brennan, 21 Fawn Drive. I just had two quick questions. The first was about the radon. Once the test is done in June, how long does it typically take to get the results back to find out?
I do believe the turnaround time was 10 days from the last time. So I'm hoping that once we get that, we can easily just send out an email blast to everyone, to give them the heads up of what those numbers are and compare them for them from the last time.
Okay, and then if the numbers are off, they'll continue to try it? Because I know my daughter will be, I believe, at the middle school for the summer rec program, and they'll still work on that over the summer to get the numbers to the appropriate levels?
Correct. And as well, and this is just planning ahead, if that continues to be a problem, we have the summer to close off those rooms and see what else we need to do to get those numbers down. But we're really happy with the tests that were done. The turning the passive systems to active systems were very easily done over the break, and we expect to be well within the norm.
Okay, great. And my second question was about the board vacancies. How does it work? Like, when someone takes a board vacancy, with the new November elections, do they get elected on in November, or do they, when they take someone's spot, it's when that person would have been elected again?
Well, for the current board members that were appointed, okay, they would be finishing out the rest of that appointment to the next time. So the people that are up are Mr. Dinkoff for his, Mrs. McLaughlin, and Mr. Malloy, if I have that correct.
Yes, correct.
The two of them are finishing terms for other people, and Mr. Dinkoff's term is up. So that's how that would work. Then everyone from there on would always be on that cycle from January through.
Okay, that's just me. Okay, great, thank you.
Thank you. We'll move on to the first recognition of the public. So any item that members of the community would like to address the board on, please feel free to come up to the mic at this point in time. And again, state your name and address and ask your question or express your concern. Does not have to be an agenda item.
Hi, Dawn Keogh, 95 Blossom Hill Road. Regarding the resolution where Nick Corcadillis is named, would it be possible, in order to maybe end this back and forth, to say that the only people who represent our board are, and you can name the board, and this way you're not pointing out one person who doesn't, but just including the people who do? Just a thought.
Thank you. Any other recognition of the public?
Mr. Board President, before we continue, and being that the topic and conversation was brought up regarding our last month's situation in your public statement, I'd like to ask for some time to, at this point, read a statement on my part. Being that it was mentioned by members of the public, they inquired about it. I'm respectfully asking some time.
I think it would be more appropriate under either old business or new business.
Okay, I know on the heels of sometimes public comment, board members have chimed in and stated the situation that they felt. So being that Mrs. Errico and a few other people have mentioned specifically numbers of people, I just would like to, before we move on, follow up with responding.
Go ahead.
All right, it's a couple pages. I'd just like to, for the record, get a statement. Thank you for allowing me the time, Mr. Board President.
Go ahead.
At our last board meeting on March 29th, a prepared statement was read by the board president, who stated in part that he now believes, or at least it appears, that there are board members breaching confidentiality. He also stated that two board members may have gone so far in an attempt to act independently of the board in collusion with an unelected member of the community by contacting the Department of Education regarding our budget process based on an email exchange that involved four board members. No board members were named, nor was there an explanation of what code of ethics may have been violated. It has since come to be published in one of the local newspapers and learned that I was one of the two individuals that was alluded to regarding the email in question. I am now taking this opportunity to publicly speak openly and freely on these fallacious, wanton, unsubstantiated, venomous, and quite frankly, pathetic allegations made against me that night. In working for the United States Treasury Department for over 21 years, I am held to the utmost integrity and ethical conduct and am scrutinized on a daily basis against the same regarding information and data that I am entrusted with, both on and off the job. My 21-plus year record is impeccable and spotless. I am confident that my fellow board members, members of our community, our teachers, staff, and administrators will be able to decipher logical conclusions from this mention. Relating to the email in question, Mr. Board President, that you find disturbing and caused you to read your prepared statement in public because you felt it was important to be read in public, I would like to reference Bylaw 0142, Board Member Qualifications, Prohibited Acts, and Code of Ethics, page 3, the last paragraph, which reads, "No elected board member shall be prohibited from making an inquiry for information on behalf of a constituent if no fee, reward, or other thing of value is promised to or given to or accepted by the member or member of his slash her immediate family, whether directly or indirectly, in return for the information requested." Yet, because of this email, the board president stated that they may have violated the New Jersey School Board Member Code of Ethics. Regarding your mention of may have violated, I ask you here tonight, Mr. Board President, for you to cite exactly what code of ethics have been violated based on me being CC'd and mentioned in an email. If no code of ethics have been violated, then I trust you will confirm the same here tonight so as to bring conclusion to this matter. And for the record, the entire board received an email from a citizen of our community on that same day, March 28th, in part encouraging each of us to contact the New Jersey Department of Education Commissioner's Office, and the phone number was provided, and request that they intervene on our behalf to allow additional time to adopt the budget. Clearly, there are two emails here asking for phone calls to be made to the Department of Education. So which email was the phone call to the Department of Education based on? In reality, it really doesn't matter which email prompted any phone call, because the part of the bylaw I cited clearly states, no elected board member shall be prohibited from making an inquiry for information on behalf of a constituent. Mr. Board President, the jargon you used in your statement, such as may have, I now believe, at least it appears, did not substantiate your accusatory tone, nor did it warrant wasting taxpayer dollars on getting advice from our board attorney on this matter if no ethical violations were committed or were being charged. You stated you were advised by our board attorney that you were on behalf of the board within your right to ask for resignations. I find it outlandish that you chose to exercise the board attorney's advice without any corroborated evidence pertaining to your belief of ethical violations being committed. Just because our board attorney says jump, it doesn't mean you should automatically say how high. As board president, you could have and clearly should have used better judgment in the handling of this situation and without spending taxpayer dollars unnecessarily on board attorney's fees. Absent conclusive evidence of any such ethical violations, there should have been no public statement made by you. We should have gone straight into executive session, like we always have done in the past in discussing sensitive board issues. It seems to me like you are being selective in disseminating public information. We are a representative of the taxpayers, and as elected officials, I believe we should not be getting personally involved with our feelings towards any citizen of our community who addresses their Board of Education, no matter who they are. This clearly seems to be the case here. Mr. Board President, in trying to make sense of these baseless accusations and innuendo coming from your March 29th statement, I think that your illusionary belief of ethical violations by me stems from superfluous paranoia by you and by what has now been well documented in the local newspapers, your personal feelings towards a member of our community. Regardless of you wanting to portray me as guilty by association here, I am going to continue to remain consistent and do what I campaigned for and was elected to do, and that is to help ensure that our children get the best, well-rounded, thorough and efficient means of education, ensure that our schools are well-run with fiscal austerity and pragmatism, be a responsible steward with a taxpayer's school tax dollars, be cognizant of our entire community's concerns, and see to it that school governance is consistently transparent and fully accountable to our taxpayers. Mr. Board President, I too am very concerned about the ability of us as a board to move forward and work together. As the leader of this board, the ball is now in your court. You can either bring closure to this issue right here, right now, tonight, which would clearly be in the best interest of this board, our district, and our community as a whole, or you can continue on with your baseless journey in trying to justify your belief of ethical violations and breaches of confidentiality, which clearly do not exist. I hope you will be able to put your paranoid and personal feelings behind you and move this board forward in our ongoing attempt to regain the confidence and trust of our community and school district. They both deserve no less. Thank you.
Mr. Frieder, can I have a copy of that, please?
Sure, I wrote on it. Sure, absolutely. Actually, can I get your, it's my only copy. Can I supply you a copy tomorrow? I will be more than.
Thank you.
No problem.
Move on to the report of the interim school business administrator.
There are two informational items this evening. First of all, the next meeting of the board will be Monday, May 14th, 2012. There are also three vacancies for board seats, and the election will take place in November. Ms. McLaughlin, Mr. Dinkoff, and Mr. Malloy are all candidates. Individuals who are interested in becoming a candidate can either contact the business office or actually the county in order to get a copy of your petitions.
And what's the deadline for that?
The deadline is June 5th, 2012 at 4 p.m.
And they can you can get the information online, is that correct?
The information is also available online.
Right.